I'm speaking with John Mackey, an award-winning composer who is quickly becoming one of the biggest names in composition today. He recently premiered his symphony for band, Wine Dark Sea, with the University of Texas Wind Ensemble last month for the 100th anniversary of the Butler School of Music. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Yeah, anytime. Let's start this interview from your college days. You went to school at the Cleveland Institute and then went to Juilliard in New York to study with John Corigliano. And so then what did you do? How did you find work in this compositional field?
Oh, my God. I did all kinds of stuff. Mostly I temped. I typed really fast, which turned out to be a much more valuable skill than being able to write music, it turned out. So I spent, I lived in New York after grad school at Juilliard and just worked in office jobs for about 7 years or 8 years. Various jobs. I worked for an arts agent who represented all of these concert artists. And I worked, actually, I temped like Book of the Month Club kind of a place, just doing like data entry. And then I temped for the New York Philharmonic for a year, which was a great way to learn about how commissioning contracts work and things like that. And then I worked for the New York, or for the Lincoln Center Archive as a temp for 6 years. And then eventually started writing wind ensemble music and was able to start making a living doing band music. You know.
Yeah. So now after several years of writing all of these wind ensemble pieces, now you're writing a symphony, or you just finished a symphony for the 100th anniversary of the Butler School of Music, and it's called Wine Dark Sea. I know this piece is about Odysseus's journey in Homer's Odyssey, but can you tell me a bit more about this piece in general?
Sure. I mean, it's a big piece. I had done, you know, over these 10 years that I've written wind ensemble music, I've written a couple concertos that are fairly long, you know, 20 minutes or so. But I'd never done a piece that was that size that didn't require a soloist. So I'd been wanting to do a large structure piece that required, you know, you didn't have to get like the greatest trombone player in the world or whatever to play it. So I wanted, you know, university groups to be able to play the thing and a big structure, and had been talking to Jerry Junkin, the director of bands at University of Texas, for several years about doing a piece like this, doing a symphony for band, because there really aren't that many symphonies for band. And my wife and I collaborate on all of my pieces. She's a grad student at MIT. She's really, really smart. And she titles all of my pieces at the very least. But with big pieces, she helps me a lot with structure. So her idea with this was, since we were going to tell a big musical story, why don't we tell, like, base it on the original epic story, which is Homer's Odyssey. So she came up with the idea of setting that to music in some way, which has been done by other composers in the past, so I cannot at all claim like this was an original idea. In fact, there's a band symphony that I came across when I was almost done with mine. I think Robert W. Smith has one that's also based on the Odyssey, and I had no idea. So we went with that idea, and she basically wrote out a summary of several of the things that she thought were highlights from the Odyssey, because we couldn't set the whole thing. It's just way too long. You couldn't have all of the adventures that Odysseus goes through and set that to a 30-minute piece. You know, that would be, it's like the size of The Ring by Wagner. You know, it's a
right.
Huge, huge story. So
yeah.
To get it to 30 minutes, it was like, let's pick and choose some things that happened. And so we picked basically three, you know, stories. Each one gets a movement. And then I set that. And she wrote the program note in its entirety, and then I set her program note to music. So not text-wise, but she wrote the program note in advance of me writing the music. And then I held the program note and read that and thought, well, this is what that would sound like. And I wrote it to that.
Oh, that's awesome. So she wrote the notes, and then you based the music on it.
Yeah, so the other way around from what it would normally be, where you would write the piece, then write the program note, we did it the opposite.
Right, that's very interesting. This first movement, Hubris, I know it begins with big fortissimo horns, kind of reminiscent of Mahler's Third Symphony, maybe?
It's exactly reminiscent of Mahler's Third Symphony.
The harmonic language is a little different from Mahler's. To me, it sounds a little bit Middle Eastern, maybe, with those horns, but you also go outside of that, too, so...
That's exactly what I was going for, sort of like Mahler in the Middle East. I was trying to do, well, not even quite Middle East. I was sort of thinking some modal kind of not exactly Western scale to try to give it that sort of otherworldly thing, like, you know, where, you know, Odysseus goes, alters all through this long voyage, and what kinds of places would he see? And so I wanted to make it kind of sound, you know, not of, you know, America or Germany or, you know, wherever, you know, Mahler. You know, I didn't want exactly that.
Cool. And this movement, the ending of the movement is actually my favorite part of the piece. It seems like you're all of a sudden lost at sea. What was going through your mind when you wrote this section with the glistening trombones and the muted trumpets? And
that is, yeah, the loss at sea thing is exactly the idea. So, you know, after what happens in the story is, you know, Odysseus has won the Trojan War and thinks basically that he is, you know, invincible or, you know, immortal, even though he's not. And so his arrogance leads to his downfall, you know, hubris. So what happens is he basically goes around bragging about how great he is. Zeus hears him say this, thinks, I will show you what true greatness is, and sinks Odysseus' ships. Shoots lightning at the ships and sinks the ship. So the idea was, I was trying to make it sound like the entire fleet, the crew, was drowning. So just kind of this sighing sound out of the trombones with them all playing this unusual chord that they all, it's always the same chord, and then they kind of gliss down from that really slowly. And there are strange sound effects that get with the percussion, just some fun techniques with, like, you get a super ball mount, which is literally a super ball on a stick, and you drag it across a tam-tam, which is like a big gong, and it makes a kind of a howling or groaning sound or moaning sound. And I end the movement with that sound on a timpani, with they drag this rubber ball across the timpani head and pedal the drum down so the pitch goes down anyway, and you get this really amazing sound that hopefully sounds kind of haunted and like everybody is drowning. And there's ocean drum in there, which is a drum that sounds like the ocean. So it's a little bit literal in that way, but it's a programmatic piece. So
yeah,
I thought it was okay to do that.
The effect is very haunting and very eerie. I think it's wonderful part of the piece. So let's listen to that first movement of John Mackey's symphony, Wine Dark Sea. This movement is called Hubris. That was the first movement of John Mackey's symphony for band, Wine Dark Sea, and he's talking with me today about it. Now let's go on to the second movement. It's very beautiful, led by harp. And was the Greek sort of lyre in your mind when you wrote this section? Because that's what it reminds me of.
Oh, that's good. I like that. I should say yes, because that would sound really smart. But not exactly. The idea with the second movement, the story of it is that after Odysseus's fleet has everyone's dead except Odysseus. Odysseus washes ashore on the island of this immortal nymph named Calypso, and she rescues him and nurses him back to health and falls in love with him. And so this is about that and her falling in love with him. Eventually, by the end of the movement, he decides that he wants to go back home to his actual wife, even though he's been with Calypso for, I think it's 7 years or something is what the story says. And he seems to be in love with her, but then wants to go home. So he says he wants to leave. He breaks her heart, and she makes him a sail and a raft and gives him a gentle wind to sail him home. She weaves this tapestry while they're together that represents her love for him. And once he says he wants to leave her, she unweaves the tapestry and uses the fabric to then make him a sail so he can leave her. And that's not quite what's in the original story. That's an embellishment from my wife, Abby, which I think is a lovely, idea that she would take this thing that she had made about their love and tear it apart and remake it for something, a tool for him to leave her.
Right, that is wonderful. And you've actually devoted, you've devoted this movement to your wife, Abby, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, she, like I said earlier, she helps with all of my pieces, but this one, more than any other, having written the entire program note for the piece in advance of writing the piece. And I felt like this was, we've been together 10 years, and this is the first time that I've ever dedicated a piece of anything to her, so I thought this was the time to do it, just the love song.
Right, yeah. It's great to have someone to bounce ideas off and collaborate with. That's
oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's hear that second movement of John Mackey's Symphony for Band, Wine Dark Sea. This movement is called Immortal Thread, So Weak. Thank you. That was the second movement of John Mackey's Symphony for Band, Wine Dark Sea, and he's here today talking to me about the symphony and its premiere. Let's move on to that third movement, The Attention of Souls. This movement is wild, fast, 6/8, and it flies by. What emotions and thoughts did you put this in this movement?
Well, originally this was not going to be the end of the symphony. There were going to be four movements, and I wrote this third movement first. And I was thinking of it like an orchestral, like a symphonic scherzo, so kind of the fun, playful, crazy movement. But by the time I had written the other two movements, I already had a half hour of music. I couldn't do much longer than that. The piece, they asked for 30 minutes at UT. This piece was going to be on a tour program because the ensemble is doing a world tour this summer, like literally around the world with the piece. And I couldn't take up the entire concert with just my one piece. So then I rewrote the end of this third movement to make it sound like the end of the symphony, which it brings back the theme from the first movement in a way that was never there before. I did that about 2 weeks before the premiere of the symphony. I rewrote the last movement to make it work as the last movement.
How long before?
About 2 weeks before I came up with. Which is that it'd be about when Odysseus has left Calypso and he sails to the end of the earth where it's always night and he has to make a sacrifice to the dead. So what he does, he slits the throat of these, sacrifice of these animals, and the blood, runs in the ground and the spirits of the dead swarm up. And I thought, ooh, that's evocative. I can come up with something, that sounds like that. So you'll hear at the beginning of the movement, you'll hear this horrible scraping sound at one point. It starts just murky and dark, and then you hear these scrape sounds, one of which is supposed to represent the slitting of the throat of the sacrificial animals. And then this dance happens, like this dance of the, the spirits of the dead. And to me, it sounds very like Shostakovich. I forget which symphony. That wasn't on purpose, but it sounds really Russian to me now that it's done, which I think is fine. I'm a big fan of the Russian stuff, so...
It's
fun and super, super fast and high energy. I didn't know if it was playable because there's a part about maybe 3/4 the way through where it just goes to the low woodwinds playing this really, really fast figure, which Jerry Junkin said sounds like Barbara of Seville. I said, how do you say Barbara of Seville? Maybe Marriage of Figaro. I think Marriage of Figaro on crack is what it is. Which is that one, whichever one that is. So, I don't think it sounds anything like that, but if I pretend that it does, it's really funny because it's so dark and, twisted and totally playable, it turns out, at least by the wind players at UT Austin, which are unbelievable players, as you've heard on the other movements so far. And what they do with this third movement is crazy.
Yeah, they are some fantastic players, and they do a great job with this piece. Let's listen to that third movement and hear the wild 6/8 and the bombastic ending of John Mackey's Symphony for Band, Wine Dark Sea. This movement is called The Attention of Souls. That was the third movement of John Mackey's Symphony for Band, Wine Dark Sea. You can listen to John Mackey's music at ostimusic.com. That's ostimusic.com. He has a plethora of works for wind ensemble and orchestra with varying degrees of difficulty, high school, college, or professional. John, do you have any last words for any up-and-coming composers that might be out there?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I would say definitely write for wind ensembles. You know, as you heard today, they can play anything, and they want to play things. You know, a lot of orchestras are not quite as excited about composers who aren't dead yet, but bands love composers who aren't dead. So, and they play the stuff well and are very enthusiastic, and I have a blast writing for them.
Yeah, well, thank you again, John, for talking with us today, and congratulations on your premiere. It's a fantastic accomplishment.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.